This episode of the Startup Slingshot is brought to you by Sunag Consulting. Sunag Consulting offers services to help your business compete and succeed in today's marketplace, including website design and online marketing. You can check them out at sunagconsulting.com or contact them by phone at 615-669-3269. For all the loyal TSS viewers out there, Sunag Consulting has put together a PDF of 20 things you can do today to improve your Facebook fan page. To snag a copy, click the Sunag logo to the right of the video. Now onto the show. My name is William Griggs, founder of the Startup Slingshot, a resource that delivers guidance from experienced entrepreneurs and business experts on how to dream, launch, and grow your business. Have you ever wondered how you can go about persuading people to act a certain way? Today's guest is BJ Fogg. BJ directs research and design at Stanford's Persuasive Technology Lab, where he focuses on creating systems to change human behavior. Today, I'm going to talk with BJ about how you can use the findings from his research to change the behavior of your employees, customers, friends, and even family members. Enjoy. All right, BJ, thanks for joining us today.
Sure thing.
Yeah, tell our viewers a little bit, a very brief background on you.
Well, I run the Persuasive Technology Lab at Stanford. I am a social scientist, an experimental psychologist, and I look at how you can design technology to influence people, mostly to change their behaviors.
Yeah, that's kind of what we want to focus on in this interview, and to kind of best structure this interview and dig into some of the stuff that you've found and some of the research that you've done about changing behaviors. I want to use the Startup Slingshot as an example for what our viewers can do. But first, can you kind of give us an overview of maybe the system you created?
Wow, I've created a lot of systems, and I've taught my students to create lots of systems. Let's talk about how behavior works. That may be what the question is. What I found in my work, so I did all these experiments about showing that computers could change people's behaviors, and that was long before it was obvious. And then as I continued to work at Stanford and outside of Stanford, I realized little by little that the bottleneck was not the technology. The bottleneck was that the people creating these systems didn't understand how human behavior worked. And so I turned more of my attention to that and developed what I call the Fogg behavior model. It basically says that there are three things that have to happen at once for behavior to occur. And if anything's missing, it will happen. The three things are a trigger, a call to action. That's one thing. People have to have some level of motivation, and they have to have the ability to do it. And so as you're designing systems, you have to make sure all of those three things come together at the same moment. And if you don't, your systems will fail.
Gotcha. So with the Startup Slingshot, our goal is to get people to act on their own entrepreneurial dreams. And by providing them partly with the support that they need and the guidance in terms of critical knowledge, but also some motivation. So when I think of motivation, I normally think of, you know, a real world story of someone overcoming the odds. What are you talking about with your framework?
Well, I do define motivation in a very specific way, but of those three elements, it's actually the least important of the three for most types of behavior. For people who are interested in being entrepreneurs but aren't doing it, I would wager motivation's not the problem. It probably is they don't know what is the next step to take. What's the tiny little step they can take? When should they take it? And they're motivated to do it if they can just get the right kind of guidance and the right kind of trigger or call to action. That's what I would bet.
Gotcha. So you're saying it would actually, would that fall under ability or trigger?
It's both. So, you know, no behavior happens without a trigger. So it's like, you know, take this little step right now. So that's, you know, a call to action, something people can do. It's small and easy to do. It's not asking them to spend too much time or too much money or what have you that they don't have. And what often happens, and I was there too, fortunately, I learned it, you know, what often happens is that you think, oh, we just need to motivate people. If we just motivate them more, they suddenly will overcome all the hurdles and do it. And that's just not how it works. And so when you talk about helping people move forward, that's the right thing to do. It's about helping them figure out what are the steps they should be doing and then helping them take those steps.
Gotcha. So when we're structuring our content, we're thinking order of operations as well. So what's an example of maybe like a trigger that you've seen other websites use or people use effectively?
Well, one of the best triggers is when I get an email from Facebook that says you have been tagged in a photo. That is with a little link. That is a call to action. It doesn't say click here to see the photo, but it implies that. And it's so easy to do. All I have to do is click on the link and it opens up the photo. So the triggers can come to us in email. We get tons of them. We get them from Facebook. We get notifications from Twitter, from Quora, on and on on. You can get triggers in postal mail that says sign up for this now. The problem with that is it's often hard to act immediately. So this is why the old media, I think, is not very interesting. And the new media that can trigger you right now to act right now, that's what's hot and that's what makes a difference.
Gotcha. And that might be where, the whole gamification movement's coming in, where they want you to act. So to act, they tell you this is the small step you have to do to get these many points or to level up.
Yeah, games are psychologically complicated. And so even though they seem familiar and fun, but when you unpack games, certainly they're triggering you to take action, which is right. They're making those next steps easy to do or apparent. And there is some motivational system involved, some reason you might want to do it. The mistake I think people make when they think about gamification is that they assume it's all about motivation. It's not. It's the more important thing of successful games is how do the triggers happen and how did the sequence of steps unfold? And the motivation can be pretty crappy on the back end. It could just be really meaningless points. That's not tons of motivation, but the experience can still work because it's triggering and it's making the next steps easy to do.
Gotcha. So let's say that I scrap the whole website that we have now, or we're working on maybe doing a version 2.0 of the startup slingshot. Where would we start with regards to building in these triggers?
Well, the first thing I would do is say, what, given our audience, what are the behaviors we want them to do? Well, it could be sign up for our newsletter, watch this video, open our email every day. So anything that you're creating, from my perspective, it's always what are the behaviors I want? And you design the whole experience, the website, the mobile app, app to achieve a handful of key behaviors. Now, if it's to move people toward being entrepreneurs, then to break out what are the important small steps people can take, those are the things you should focus people on. The way behavior works is the more you succeed, the more likely you are to succeed in the future. So what you, a good teacher, a good program designer, a good coach will help you have a sequence of successes. Success, 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 success. Because then that makes you more, it opens, well, it makes you more capable of succeeding in the future. And it also keeps your motivation up. So that, so the Holy Grail is triggering the right sequence of baby steps.
Gotcha.
That's all of behavior design in what, seven words?
Yeah, right. So it's kind of the small wins where you're kind of getting
Yes.
them to accomplish one thing, and then you're saying, hey, now that you've accomplished this, check this out. And then they accomplish that. So breaking it down, that makes a lot of sense. Breaking it down farther and farther into small chunks, but still keeping that order of operation that gets them from where they are now to where we want them to be. And just go ahead.
An analogy to think of is, when most of us learned to swim, they didn't just take us and throw us in the middle lake and say, start swimming, or, try to motivate us to swim while we're floundering in the middle lake. We went through a series of learning experience, step by step by step by step, till we were able to swim. Something like starting a company is at least as complicated as learning to swim. So it's foolish to think that you could just say, somebody start a company and we're just going to motivate you more and more and more. No, there's got to be a process, a sequence of learning how to do that. Same is true for weight loss, same is true for financial security. So one of the big mistakes in our culture is not understanding that things like starting companies and saving money and losing weight are at least as complicated as swimming, and we need to develop systems that progress people through those more effectively.
Is there any rule of thumb you would suggest in terms of how small to make these steps?
Well, I'm doing a program right now that I launched 4 weeks ago called Three Tiny Habits. It took me 4 hours to launch the service. So I sat down and 4 hours later, I launched it. And what people do in the system is they pick teeny tiny habits in their lives that they want to create, and I help them make them very small. So, for example, one of the habits for somebody who wants to get up on time is as soon as my alarm rings, I put 2 feet on the floor. One of my favorite habits is, after I brush, floss one tooth. So if you're not flossing your teeth, the place to start is just floss one tooth. Don't floss all your teeth. People in my program who wanted to write more, the right tiny habit is just get out my pencil and a notebook. That's the habit. It's not even writing, but if you can create the right, the way I'm talking about it there is if you plant the right seed in a good spot, it will grow without further coaxing. So in other words, if you create the habit of getting out your writing notebook and a pencil or pen, and that becomes a habit, you will eventually be writing more and more and more all the time.
Gotcha. Getting them started. So it seems like if the people are coming to the site, they're already interested in entrepreneurship. So they might have a fertile soil to which
Exactly.
what we want to do is plant the seed of not come up with 10 business ideas, just come up with one, go down the path or test it out in this specific manner and go from there. That's
And only you, a subject matter expert, can say what those right things are. I'm an expert on how behavior works, how habits form, but I can't say, and even though I've done my own entrepreneurial things, I'm not a subject matter expert on helping people go down that path. So it really does rely on somebody who understands that to map out the options or the sequences that people should be following.
Gotcha. And then how does ability fall into this framework?
Well, ability is super important. When it comes to habits, all the habits we have are very easy to do. Anything that's hard to do will not become a habit. So if you're designing a habit, you have to make it really, really, floss one tooth, not all your teeth. Walk for 3 minutes, not run for 3 hours. When it comes to ability, after triggers, ability is the next most important thing. Trigger people to do something. If they're not doing it, then make it easier to do. That's the next thing you do in troubleshooting. If the entry form has 20 fields, break it back to two and so on. Just make it just drop dead simple for people to do what you want them to do. And only last do you worry about how do we motivate, how do we incent, how do we introduce, surveillance or accountability or game mechanics or something like that. That so again, it kind of goes counter to what people usually believe. And for me, it was a learning process too, that much of our understanding about how behavior works is backwards.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I definitely dug into a lot of the videos on YouTube of your interviews. So it's all starting to come together. But you talk a little bit about you taught a course, I think, on video at Stanford and how you can utilize video to be more persuasive. Obviously, we're doing this as an audio interview, but maybe we'll put up a picture of you so they can see it. What did you learn or what did you teach your students in that course?
Wow, the video is one of the most persuasive channels that we have, online video. And it does two things. One, video can be very motivational. It can show you the benefits of a product, or it can show you how popular and cool you'll be if you drive a certain car, what have you. But we often forget that video also can enable you to do things step by step. Video is a great how-to instructional format. And I think that's a more powerful use of video than the motivational side. So again, when you break it down to triggers, ability, and motivation, and what does video do well, I think it does ability. It makes things easier to do. For example, I was setting up, oh, I was using a new web host and I was doing some technical thing that I hadn't done before. They had a whole series of videos that walked me through how to do it. And in that case, getting me to do the behavior they wanted me to do, which was to use aspects of their web service, wasn't about motivating me to do it. They just needed to make it easier. And they did that by providing, and they're kind of crappy videos and they were too small. but it still works. So the video quality doesn't have to be great. It just has to do the job.
Gotcha. And so they could have given you a list of 1 to 10 things to do. You might look at that, be a little overwhelmed. You'd rather click the button and watch the video.
You know, and people are different. You know, a list, step-by-step list might work best, but certainly in the context I was in, I was just so glad I had a video because I could see exactly what they were doing on the interface, and I just followed along on the interface, you know, the live interface I was working on, and bam, and it was done.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I had a similar experience to that where I was unfamiliar with the product, hopped into it, figured out how I needed or how I could do what I needed to do by watching a video. What else did you kind of learn or teach your students in that class?
Well, keep the videos really short and watch for formulas of what works with videos. There are certain kind of video recipes that work. I taught it in an election year, and one of the things, the patterns was you have somebody start out speaking, and then the same sentence continues and a different person saying it. You know, it's the same message, but the heads, the people talking morph and morph and morph. That's a winning pattern. And so just take that technique and apply it to something else. And one of my students did with one of the videos he did later, and he got millions of views on the video. The other thing is the call to action in the video. It doesn't really matter if, you know, 3 million people watch it if it doesn't drive a behavior change. So the video has to be very clearly focused on here's what you do next. Gotcha. And so there's ways you bundle videos with forms right next to it, or you make a very simple call to action through the video. Watching video views alone, I think, are pretty meaningless. It's really about how does the video then convert people to do the behavior.
Right. And so what would be your suggestion? Obviously, a lot of the podcasts I listen to and look at are an hour in length. Is that something that from your studies or findings is too long?
Well, I haven't studied that necessarily. When you have a video that's trying to get somebody to donate money or support a cause or something very concrete like that where they're not trying to learn, the video has been imposed on them by a friend or something like that, it's got to be super short and to the point. The context of, you know, I'm creating an hour-long video to teach, they're there to learn. And so the call to action, I mean, it's probably stay tuned, don't tune out. But then at the end, apply what you've been taught, probably. I mean, it varies. It depends on the teaching style.
Gotcha. It depends on that. And then also probably depends on, like you're saying, kind of the mode that they're in. You know, you hear a lot about lean forward or lean back, whether you're watching TV or surfing the internet. Yeah. So that's interesting. So definitely learned a lot in terms of short or small steps, small wins, small victories early. Kind of look to your example of the 3 tiny habits of breaking it down into things that they can do that will lead to the action, not just saying write more, but saying get out your pen and write for a minute.
Yes. And that's, you know, and in the, I know we have to wrap up here, but let me say one more thing. In the academic theories and approaches to behavior change, what has been almost entirely ignored is sequencing behaviors to an ultimate end. And a lot of my work has looked at that. A lot of my teaching and a lot of the design and training I do is about, okay, here's the ultimate end. You want to finish writing your book. What are the sequences of actions that have to happen to get you there? And how do you make each step in the sequence happen? And really mapping that out is not so complicated. It only takes like 10 minutes to map it out. And then you just work it back. And you just systematically knock it off one by one. So, yes, you're exactly right. It's figuring out what's the sequence and how do you get each step done, whether it's for yourself or whether it's a customer sequence. How do we get our customers to go through the sequence? And for whatever reason, academics, in my view, has been very bad at that. Conversion funnel people have been a lot better. But I'm trying to bring some of that thinking into the world of health and other kinds of things that aren't necessarily about just buying a product.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. If our viewers or if I want to dig into more information on this topic, what's like the number one place we should look?
I've got various websites and places where I share. You know, certainly following me on Twitter is a kind of a bits and pieces way of doing it. So I'm BJ Fogg on Twitter. BJFogg.com, I update from time to time. BJFogg.com points out to the other things I'm doing, so that's probably the clearinghouse.
Gotcha. BJFogg.com. And is there anything else that we didn't cover that maybe should trigger a thought or a Google search just for the next step?
Well, Yes, of course. There's lots. I teach a persuasion boot camp that lasts 2 days. And so we still have about a day and 19, 20 minutes left to talk about. So there's a lot here. But what people should do is seriously look at my behavior model, understand how that works. And once you have that lens on the world, things get much clearer. Once you get that, you can be learning things on your own that nobody has figured out. It's just this clarifying framework. So that would be the 1 5-minute investment I would encourage people to do.
Good. That's a great way to end the video. BJ, this has been great, and I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us today.